one revolution at a time. You might have the greatest new idea of all time, but it still has to be implemented in the existing world. Someone will say, "Yeah, but how does it fit with the way we do business around here?" It's a fair question. An idea that requires too much change in an organization may not gain acceptance. It's hard to sell more than one revolution at a time. Let's say you're meeting with colleagues or higher-ups. You're proposing an idea about how to archive and then access customer insights in the company's database, and they're paying attention. Then you mention that they'll have to give up Windows as an operating system. The room falls silent. Suddenly you're talking about a more involved undertaking, and people are perhaps feeling a bit overwhelmed by the implications of all this. Is getting rid of Windows essential to your idea? If it is, you better have a superb argument and plan for converting, with minimal effort and disruption, to a new system. You don't have to compromise unduly with the forces of inertia. Just try to structure your idea so that it requires no more change than is absolutely necessary. Your idea has to be compatible, or potentially compatible, with the world as you find it. In 1879, Thomas Edison's incandescent light bulb was a revolutionary idea. But a system for distributing electrical power had not yet been created. Edison did not try to invent such an infrastructure. Instead, he found compatibility with the existing system of gas lighting, running electricity through the pipes, fixtures, and meters already in customers' homes. He chose to effect just one revolution at a time. Pressing the hot buttons. What keeps senior managers up at night? What are the problems and opportunities that haunt them during the day? What are their fondest dreams and worst nightmares? If you can tie your idea to any of these hot buttons, you'll have a much better chance of winning acceptance. The hot button principle was at work in the launching of Elixir Strings. One problem for guitar store owners was that they had to continually restring their showroom instruments as potential buyers tried out the guitars and wore out the strings. The only alternative, if they didn't want to go through the trouble and expense of putting on new ones, was to let the strings lose their bright tone. The long-lasting Elixir strings changed all that. Shop owners could restring their guitars less often without compromising the bright tone that customers liked. That was a huge advantage, which also resolved the issue of the price point, because fewer sets of strings had to be purchased. Today, Elixir is installed in the factories of nearly every leading guitar maker that does not manufacture its own strings. Improvability. Sociologist Randall Collins has researched ways of capturing what he calls a share of attention space. One strategy is to frame your idea as extending and improving an existing idea. In other words, identify an idea that someone else is working on, agree with it, and add something that expands and improves it. That was the approach Steve Jobs took in January 2010 when he introduced the iPad, Apple's foray into e-books. "Amazon has done a great job with Kindle," Jobs declared at a news conference. "We're going to stand on their shoulders and go a little bit further." This is the principle of improvability, which holds that a product can always be better or adapted for additional uses. The pitch is altogether different from another strategy for gaining attention space, taking a contradictory position in which you try to demonstrate that a particular idea is completely new, a break with the past. Triability. Whenever possible, let people try your idea before they buy into it. As the late communication scholar, Ev Rogers, demonstrated in his widely influential research, customers and colleagues are far more likely to sign on if they're less worried about making a decision they'll come to regret. That's why America Online gave away millions of system disks. The company believed that recipients were more likely to try AOL if they didn't have to pay for it first. It's also why Apple iTunes is set up so that people can listen to 30-second snippets of music before they buy a CD. The tracks are triable. The principle could apply to almost any idea ready for launch. Someone working in a sales department might have a new format for sales reporting that you would like to promote. For example, instead of simply arguing for the approach, she could start circulating brief versions of reports in the new format, letting people try it out. She might like it and ask for more. Focusing on the benefits. At all times, you need to keep the message simple. This can be challenging for people who are close to an idea and deeply knowledgeable of its ins and outs. Often they'll complicate their message unnecessarily by spending most of the time describing how the idea works. It's much better to instead focus on what stakeholders will get from the idea. Apple's experience with the iPad is, once again, illustrative. Undoubtedly, the device has many fascinating technical components, but at the news conference, Jobs did not spend much time on them. Instead, he enumerated the benefits of the device. Browsing the web, sending email, sharing photographs, watching videos, enjoying music, playing games, and reading e-books. He focused on the user's experience, what they would get from the idea. That's what any target audience will want to know. Notice what happens when you've settled upon an idea. You need more ideas to launch it. When W.L. Gore couldn't get guitar sellers to take an interest in its revolutionary brand of guitar strings, it needed ideas, for example, about good brand association. When Steve Jobs planned his pitch to the public for the iPad, he needed ideas about extending Amazon's work with Kindle. You don't stop thinking and searching once you have a fully developed idea. The hunt continues.